I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway.
Remember, you are safer at home. The virus is widespread. So if you don't need to go out, don't go out.
Words of warning there from Arizona Governor Doug Ducey, whose state is now in the middle of a COVID-19 health crisis with hospitals close to reaching capacity. On Sunday, nearly 4,000 people tested positive for the virus in the state, nearly double the number of cases reported the previous week. And since the crisis began, nearly 75,000 people have tested positive for the virus in Arizona, with close to 1,600 people dead. Arizona is just one of the states that began to reopen businesses earlier than the CDC recommended, only to see a surge in coronavirus cases shortly thereafter. Similar spikes are being seen in California, Texas, and Florida. And we've been hearing from you in some of those states.
Hi, I'm Gianna from Dallas, Texas. We didn't have clear instructions on what should close across the state at the beginning. And in the past few weeks, local officials have been pushing for a slower reopening, while state officials have been trying to reopen sooner rather than later. Just recently, I've seen the governor have a change of heart in the midst of all the increased COVID cases, but I can't help but feel that it's too little too late.
Hi, this is Kaylin. I'm calling from Phoenix, Arizona, where I do not feel comfortable with the actions our government is taking. We have a rapidly rising COVID cases and hardly anyone wears masks. It's basically a disaster waiting to happen.
That's a caller from Arizona there, where yesterday Governor Ducey announced a 30-day closure of
bars, gyms, movie theaters, water parks, and tubing.
As of today, more than 126,000 people have died in the United States from the pandemic. Dr. Frank LaVecchio is seeing all of this play out in his state. He's a professor of emergency medicine at the University of Arizona in Phoenix. Frank, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. My pleasure. Thank you.
So tell us, what are you hearing and seeing in emergency rooms in Arizona as hospitals begin to get to capacity?
Well, I work in a handful of emergency departments in the Phoenix metropolitan area, and I'm seeing what we've never seen before, which is tons and tons of COVID patients. And what I mean by that is I might be working a shift. We have about 40 beds or so in our emergency department. Over half of them will be confirmed COVID cases. And the last few days, almost every day, they have no place to go. The intensive care units are at capacity. We have to wait for someone to get discharged from an intensive care unit for one of the patients in our emergency department to go up. The other half of the beds in our emergency department are those maybe waiting for a COVID test. And a small percentage, maybe 1 in 10 people, are there for non-COVID complaints. So it's nonstop COVID all the time right now.
Dr. LaVecchio, one of the things that I recall being in New York City during the peak of the pandemic here in March and April were just images of emergency rooms at full capacity, people on gurneys in certain hospitals waiting in hallways, and hospital and healthcare frontline workers not getting the equipment that they needed. It was truly an intense moment. Is that the level of intensity we're seeing on the ground in the ER? And how are healthcare workers being prepared to handle this increasing number of cases?
You know, having trained at the hospital where they showed on TV a lot, Elmhurst Hospital, I trained there about 20 years ago. We're not at the extreme where they have so many people in the hallways. And one of the reasons for that is we're trying to protect, you know, everyone that works there, et cetera. We are on seriously plan B, C, and D, where we're taking almost any room we can. In the beginning, it was only rooms with negative pressure where they would have their own ventilation and air gets sucked out. And that's where we put COVID patients. But now essentially they're going almost anywhere, which really, really changes and slows us down. With regard to PPE, we do have an adequate number of PPE. We have appropriate PPE for us. I think it's a lot better in that respect.
Dr. Lovecchio, who are the cases that are coming in? What is their demographic? We heard often, we know that this is a disease or it's a virus that can affect people with what's known as comorbidities, underlying health conditions. We also know that it can affect the elderly, and it also can affect populations that are of color, black and brown populations. What are you seeing there in terms of who is coming into the ER?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because it is true that most of the people that do die from this illness are 65 and over, and most of them have one medical problem or so. But the medical problems that they include are obesity and hypertension. You know, I mean, those are very, very simple medical problems that a lot of us unfortunately do have. I think the great majority of people that come in that I see are Hispanic or Latin origin. And I think that has something to do with our population, which is, you know, very Latino, but also, you know, they're very relatively underserved. Many of them are blue collar workers. Many of them have taken public transportation or used other areas where they have to congregate, et cetera. Many of them live in multifamily homes. So disproportionately Latino, and the people who are getting killed are the Native Americans. Up north, the northeast part of Arizona, close to the New Mexico border. I mean, if you look at the fatality rate up there, it's incredible. We have no place to send those patients. They sometimes come down to Flagstaff in northern Arizona, and actually some of them come down to Phoenix. So they're really getting hurt hard. There aren't a lot of ICU beds up there. There's a lot of comorbidities. A lot of them live in close quarters.
We are still learning how the virus is spread, but we do know that wearing face coverings, at least, is one temporary measure that many people are being encouraged to do. Doctor, can you tell us why there is such a surge in confirmed cases in Arizona, and whether the mask wearing or lack thereof has anything to do with that?
The first part is relatively easy, because we don't know why we have such a surge now. I mean, this virus, we're going to probably look back on it a year or two from now and have a better understanding. You know, just the other day, it celebrated 6 months, you know, a 6-month birthday, you know, kind of an ominous birthday, but it celebrated, you know, only being around for 6 months, you know, in the history of the world. And we don't quite understand it. We do spend a lot of time indoors in Arizona now at this time. You know, this is kind of, quote, our winter, because we're spending lots of times indoors. And we know being indoors, being close to people, is more likely to transmit it. Okay, so that part is probably true. The other thing is that there's so many, you know, young kids that have it. The 20 to 30-year-olds, the, you know, 15 to 40-year-olds who have minimal to no symptoms, who are out and about. There is this culture in Arizona, unfortunately, of people that don't even believe this thing exists. Because there's a little bit of separation of the rich and poor, and, you know, a lot of people of lower socioeconomic status will get the disease, and the rich don't understand it. You know, they have, you know, larger houses, you know, able to spread out, able to social distance. And if you saw what happened as soon as they lifted the orders that, you know, hey, we're going to let you guys go about your business as usual, people went nuts. People went crazy. There was pool parties on top of each other. There is, you know, I'm sure it made it to the New York papers, et cetera, where people were doing shots off each other's body at pool parties. And it was just like, you know, this is supposed to be a gradual opening. We're paying the price because our governor, you know, last night kind of hauled things back and said, look, you know, we're going to have to close bars and gyms, et cetera. And, you know, now we're going to go on a shutdown for at least another month. Kids' schools have been pushed out another week. Our hospitals are at capacity. Week over week, I've had the most people in an intensive care unit. And when it could get no worse, you know, the next day is a little bit worse. So we haven't hit our peak yet. Our hospitalizations in general keep going up and up and up. Our percent intubated or on respirators keep going up and up and up. And the lessons we learned from New York is that's the last thing you want to do. Last resort, put somebody on a respirator. And unfortunately, even though we know that, and we're intubating much less people percent-wise than places like New York did, or even Detroit or Louisiana, we still have the record numbers. You know, we are bulging. You know, the data will suggest that we are 86%, 88% capacity in our intensive care unit. And I have to say, you know, I don't find that totally truthful. I was like, great. That means you might have an empty bed. Who's going to man that bed? Where's the nurse coming from? You know, do we have a nurse? You know, we thank God we have enough doctors. I think some of my staff, unfortunately, is starting to get sick, but these nurses have to get imported from out of the state. And, you know, they come at a premium that a poorer state can't afford. And they don't know our system, right? They don't know our hospital. They might be the greatest nurses in the world, but they might not know your hospital. They might not know your computer system, your labs, what doctors to call.
So there's a learning curve is what you're saying for anyone that has to come in from outside of the system.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, for lack of a better word, they're useless for the first week or so. And, you know, you don't want to resort to that. First, you're paying them double, you're giving them housing, et cetera. Some of my nurses came to New York early on when we weren't hit, and they made what they would make typically in Arizona in 1 week. They made 4 weeks' salary. So it's pretty impressive.
At the very peak of the pandemic, there were state reports, local government updates, and also the federal government gave a daily briefing to the country. Federal government spent about the past 2 months not giving a briefing, finally gave a briefing with Vice President Pence about a couple days ago. Are you satisfied with the federal government's response to this crisis? And what are specific interventions that you believe need to be put in place to prevent the spread? There's about a minute left.
You know, we all admire Dr. Fauci. We think that he speaks with honesty. We read his textbooks growing up. You know, we admire him and we wish he was out there a little bit more. You know, we wish we had a better backup plan. And I tell my kids, I said, hopefully the next time this pandemic hits or something like this hits, you know, the federal government will have a better plan. There's no way my hospitals are going to step up and buy extra ventilators and have a plan B and C in place. So it'd be nicer if the federal government was more involved.
And just a final question here. How is morale doing for the doctors that you talk to?
In a word, horrendous. We all talk. Every time we get a little sniffle or cold, we're texting each other and saying, oh my God, do I have COVID? Is it just from wearing my mask all day? And that's the pathetic part of it. You know, I got to wear PPEs all day. I wear two masks and then some other shields, and people can't go to a grocery store and wear a simple cloth mask, which is a minimum amount of protection, relatively comfortable because it's, quote, their freedom. I think our morale sucks. You know, once every week or so, we see one of our nurses or doctors get sick or respiratory techs. You know, I think we're all getting a little burnt and we have no release now.
Dr. LaVecchio is a professor of emergency medicine at the University of Arizona in Phoenix. Doctor, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.